Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab. Adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Hello again, everybody. And former Secretary of State Madeleine Albright is ready to go, and she'll be on with us right after I remind you just for a minute of the extra incentive in our membership drive, the extra incentive that ends this hour. If you pledge by noon, you'll automatically be entered to win a $4,000 Apple computer shopping spree at TechServe. So MacBooks, iPads, iPhones, accessories, whatever Apple things, you can stuff in your shopping cart up to $4,000 worth if you're the lucky winner, and that's in effect until noon. Call 1-888-376-WNYC to support the station for 2013, 1-888-376-9692, or online at WNYC.org. You don't have to pledge to enter the contest, but of course we hope you will at WNYC.org or 1-888-376-9692. And thanks to all of you for your support. Now to former Secretary of State Madeleine Albright. Her book out in paperback now is called Prague Winter, A Personal Story of Remembrance and War, 1937 to 1948. We'll talk about the book and some things from today's news. Secretary Albright, it's always good to have you on. Welcome back to WNYC.
Thank you. Great to be with you.
And it's well known to all our listeners by now that your Jewish parents converted to Catholicism and that you only found out about your Jewish roots many decades later. And you seem to say in the book that they converted for you so that you and your siblings would have an easier life. And yet you point out it probably was not to protect you from the Holocaust per se. What's your best understanding of what your parents were protecting you from?
I think this is a really hard question to answer because it's only speculation, and I can only operate on the basis of what I know about my parents. And I think that it really was in order to protect us from the horrors that they foresaw in many different ways, and that I say in the book that, as you point out, that it wasn't to escape the Holocaust because we were already in England at the time, but that it also does not take a lot of imagination to think that at that stage it might have been simpler to think being raised Christian would protect us in the long run. But it's very hard for me to speculate about it because what I think they were most interested in was, it sounds self-centered, but protecting me and then later my brother and sister.
You also ask yourself in the book if you regret your parents' conversion, to which you also don't have an easy answer, and it's not an easy question. So let me ask you this way. What advice would you give to parents somewhere in the world today who are part of a despised minority? Would you advise them to pass as the majority if they could to protect their children?
Again, every situation is different. I do think that people want very much to protect their children. I think that is a very basic fact. I also believe the following thing, and I say this in the book, that if my parents, this had all come up at a time when it was evident that thousands of Jews had been killed, that they would not have converted, that they really were good moral people and that what they wanted was to do the right thing. No, I think that people need to know about their past. I do believe that. I am not angry at my parents. A lot of people ask me if I'm angry at my parents. How could I possibly be, since they basically gave me life twice? And so I'm not. But I think parents make a decision about how they want to protect their children. That's the most important thing.
Changing topics, but still on the history. Two central figures in your book are the Czech leaders, both before and after World War II, Tomáš Masaryk and Edvard Beneš, forgive me if I mispronounce their names, who your father worked for as a diplomat. Beneš had the dubious distinction of having to resign as president in 1938 when the Nazis took over, and again in 1948 when the communists took over. Were these men heroes to you as somebody growing up with Czech roots?
Well, they're complicated characters. I think Thomas Masaryk was definitely a hero. I think he was somebody that was the first president of a new country, Czechoslovakia, kind of a philosopher king, very close to the United States. He'd married an American woman and did something unheard of, which is to take her middle name as his maiden name. He was a outright Democrat and somebody that really prized the fact of being able to start a new country. Edward Beneš is a little bit more complicated because he, as you point out, did resign. There were people who thought that he should have fought. There were elements of the Czechoslovak military that mobilized in order to fight. He made the decision ultimately that it was better to leave and to save the nation for another day. And then also he resigned in 1948 when the communists took over. So there are always very deep questions about him. But on balance, I think he did the right thing. One of the things that I talk about is the difficulty of making moral decisions. We always think that everything is black and white. It's not. And thinking about what unintended consequences are, what the real situation is at the time, I think we have to be more careful about being judgmental.
And so looking at these grand themes, these unbelievable moments of history when the Germans were invading and then when the Russians were invading, looking at our politics today in this country, when the parties squabble over, you know, the difference between a top tax rate of 35% or 39% and things like that and make it seem like the biggest deal in the world, do you think how petty it all is? I grew up at a time and place where we had to stare down Hitler and Stalin.
Well, it does seem very petty in ways, although they clearly are important issues. In the following way, I wish it were being discussed in a larger context, which is what is the role of government in the 21st century? I think it's a very important question. And so it seems petty about the arguments as percentages, but in the long run, it could and should be a very large discussion. You know, in some ways, there's a nostalgia about the big decisions that you talk about and the simplicity of the Cold War, for instance. And I don't think we should go in that direction, but I do think that what makes this period of history so hard is we are dealing with kind of inchoate threats domestically and internationally with terrorists that are multiplying and failing states and issues that are really kind of hard to get your head around.
My guest is former Secretary of State Madeleine Albright. Let me get your take on something in the news right now. It's been reported that President Obama has resisted sending arms to the Syrian rebels against the advice of Secretary of State Clinton, Defense Secretary Panetta, and the Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. And I wonder if you're in your opinion, if that is a profile encouraged by the president to go against all of that advice of his top advisors, or if it's a profile in folly.
I think that it is what the job of the president is. The bottom line is that I know what it's like to be in those meetings when advice is offered. And it is done in a variety of different ways, either on paper or personally. The job of the various secretaries is to go into meetings and present their views. The job of the president is to make up, to make the decision. And I think that the president, by necessity, has a much larger view of a particular issue. And also what I think is, or I know, is that no decision is ever static, that part of what goes on is that there's constant re-looking at issues, trying to figure out what the situation is at the exact moment. Is it smart to do? What are the longer-term plans? So I believe that the president made the right decision. I also do think that they need to keep reevaluating what is going on in Syria, continuing to do something that I think people haven't focused on enough is the huge American supply of humanitarian assistance, non-lethal assistance to the refugees, the support that has been given to the various opposition groups to unite, to support them, and to assess basically who this rebel group is and is it smart to give arms or are there already enough arms? Those are the kinds of things that the president has to consider.
We did a series on this program last year called End of War, in which we asked many people if they think humanity can ever abolish war, kind of like we abolished slavery. And post-war Europe is given as one of the prime examples of why it actually might be possible. After hundreds, maybe thousands of years of war, culminating in Hitler and Stalin, Europe seems to have given up war. And I wonder if, given your experience from a refugee in World War II to Secretary of State, should we take that lesson from recent European history?
It would be great if we really did, because obviously the 20th century was still the bloodiest in ever, and millions of people died, and they're definitely in the post-World War II Europe has been a complete change and a desire never to go to war again. What I do think is troubling is that when, in fact, the economic situation deteriorates, what happens is that kind of nationalism sets in again. If you're watching what's going on in Europe and kind of a blame the other country approach, and that's why I think it's so important for the European Union to sort itself out so that that nationalism does not return, because nationalism often then carries with it blaming somebody else and ultimately perhaps using arms. And so I think what is important is for us to recognize the fact that borders may not matter so much, that we are living in a globalized world and that we have higher priorities than killing each other.
We have 2 minutes left, and I want to ask you two quick questions about the newest Secretary of State, John Kerry. Here he is yesterday warning about the consequences of the sequestration budget if it comes into effect.
Foreign assistance is not a giveaway. It's not charity. It is an investment in a strong America and in a free world. Foreign assistance lifts other people up and then reinforces their willingness to link arms with us in common endeavors.
So if you could give me a quick, like, 30-second answer to whether you think Americans misunderstand foreign aid, and if you think important foreign aid in America's interest is actually threatened in this sequestration budget.
I think it is threatened, and I fully agree with Secretary Kerry. I actually wish we weren't calling it foreign aid, those two words together. I think it should be called national security support, because it is good for America to be able to operate in a world where people are democratic and linking arms, as the way Secretary Kerry said.
And last question, as Secretary Kerry got ready to follow you and Condoleezza Rice and Hillary Clinton, he had this on his mind the other day.
Here's the big question before the country and the world and the State Department after the last 8 years. Can a man actually run the State Department? I don't know.
What do you think? Can a man actually run the State Department anymore?
Well, let's hope, because I think diversity is a good idea. Secretary Kerry did steal my line. When I became Secretary of State, I said I hoped my heels could fill Warren Christopher's shoes. So he has reversed that, and I wish him all the luck. It's a mistake to think that women are the weaker sex.
Thank you very much, former Secretary of State Madeleine Albright. Her book, now out in paperback, is Prague Winter, A Personal Story of Remembrance and War, 1937 to 1948. I appreciate it a lot.
Thank you.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. More to come. Stay with us.